Only you could be so bold.
The Imperial Senate will not sit still for this. When they hear you've attacked...
How dare the press not believe me that I went after my mother with a hammer?
That was from a fantastic viral video that came out earlier in this 2016 presidential cycle with, of course, Donald Trump as Darth Vader. But the idea of Star Wars raising issues of morality and social philosophy and issues of consequence is really no joke. Those kinds of issues are at the heart of the Star Wars movies a lot. And that is what a new book is about. It's called The World According to Star Wars. The author of The World According to Star Wars is not the sort of person you'd expect. I don't think he's ever been to a Comic-Con convention. He's not a big pop culture commentator. He is Cass Sunstein, who is this name brand legal scholar, maybe the most famous legal scholar at this point in America, and a former Obama administration official.
Recently confirmed, regulatory czar Cass Sunstein.
The man who put many of the Obama administration's regulations in place.
The most dangerous man in America, Cass Sunstein.
The most dangerous man in America. I love that. And of course, you heard some right-wing people demonizing him, but the left also hated a lot of what Cass was about. Some people were surprised when he came out with this strange outlier of a book. I was not, because I went to college with Cass Sunstein around the time the original Star Wars movie came out. And back then, he wasn't just going home to his dorm room to read the Federalist Papers. He was, along with me, an editor of our college humor magazine, the Harvard Lampoon. So when he sat down to talk with me about this new Star Wars book, I couldn't help but yank his chain a little bit. Does this queer your Supreme Court nomination, like defending your talk about the Siths in front of a Senate committee?
I think the book has increased my chances by maybe a thousandfold. I think everyone loves Star Wars, so if you wanted to get on the Supreme Court, the thing to do really is to write a book about Star Wars.
Well, the first one, of course, came out when we were young and you were in law school. Have you been a consistent Star Wars nerd since then?
Not really. So then I liked Star Wars. I liked A New Hope plenty. Maybe I liked it a ton. I liked Empire Strikes Back even better, and I liked Return of the Jedi. But my becoming a Star Wars-focused person is extremely recent, and it's prompted by my now 7-year-old son, who improbably at the age of 5 became very focused on Star Wars, and that got me very curious about the whole phenomenon.
Was there, as you rewatched them as a middle-aged person with your son, was there a particular scene that made you go, whoa, I'd forgotten how important this is?
Yeah, the scene that kind of knocked my socks off is the scene where Luke almost kills his dad.
Never. I'll never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
That's a very moving line. And if you think about the context, where what Luke is doing is he's identifying with his dad, who's the worst person in the universe except for the Emperor.
Yeah.
And he's kind of claiming him. And he's also saying that his father's a Jedi, not a Sith. And that's a statement of trust and connection that in the context of fighting and lightsabers, it runs pretty deep.
So you're Cass Sunstein. When you announce to your peers at Harvard Law School and in government that, I'm writing this Star Wars book, how did they react?
Negative. They thought this was a really bad idea, and they hoped it was like you wake up in the morning and think, I'm going to work on this, but by the afternoon you get over it. So my friends thought this was likely to be an unsuccessful book in the sense that no one would publish it, and also likely to be a diversion of focus from the footnotes and the law review articles.
Yeah.
A kind of self-indulgent pursuit of an interest that would be not worthy of using word processing time on.
Get rid of those people. They're squares. They're stiffs. Although it's not, so unlike your other work in that it is About social and legal and political philosophy, but placed in the context of this pop cultural, drag.
You're right. There is a connection between Star Wars and episode creation. Bear with me here, if you would, and law. And that's the first thing that drew me in. So I Am Your Father is a way of making everyone go, whoa, because what they had thought before is completely in a new light. And that's both shocking and also can produce a sense of immediate recognition. That's it. That's right.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
And so the woe of I Am Your Father is, I think, very arresting. And laws like that, too. When the Supreme Court struck down racial segregation in 1954, really that wasn't spooling out what anyone who wrote the Constitution's provisions thought. That was an I Am Your Father moment of the best kind.
So just so that listeners are clear, you're saying in the same way that epical milestone Supreme Court decisions, people didn't see it necessarily coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if Darth Vader had said, not I am your father, but I am R2-D2, or yeah. I am your cat, or I'm just your dream, then that would have been shark jumping. It would have made the whole narrative stupid. And certainly conservatives think that the Supreme Court's upholding the Affordable Care Act was a I am R2-D2 moment. And it's legitimate to argue both for episodes and for in a narrative, including Star Wars, and in law. You know, are we making sense of our tradition, or are we turning it into nonsense?
I was thinking about the Star Wars universe and how it's pretty black and white, and the good guys are pretty totally good, and the bad guys are definitely totally bad. And your work is so much about nuance and ambiguity, and as a result, people on the right and left hate you with great passion equally. There is no Cass Sunstein equivalent in the Star Wars universe, is there?
I actually see things a little differently.
I'm sure you do.
The way I see Star Wars is that the person who restores balance to the Force, the Chosen One, the person who commits the most heroic act ever, is Darth Vader.
Luke, help me take this mask off.
He is the Chosen One. He is the one who sacrifices everything, not just his life, but his life's cause, in order to do one thing, save his child.
Go, my son.
No, you're coming with me. I'll not leave you here. I've got to save you.
You already have, Luke.
And his soul is saved, no question about that. And it's not that that's random. His son thought all along, there is good in you, and was right. So I think the movie looks a lot simpler in terms of good versus evil than it actually is. It's saying that in the worst of us, there is good, which can lead to redemptive acts of the highest order. And the best of us, if you don't go dark, you're not human.
Well put. And now I have to go watch the movies again and think about them in this more serious, deep and thoroughgoing way that you have. A few years ago, you co-wrote a book called Nudge about how governments need to be something between nanny states and laissez-faire, do-nothing entities, and to nudge people into making better decisions because they make bad decisions on their own. In this book, I was interested that you say that theory could be applied to Jedi Knights. Explain that.
It can. So you could say that Jedi Knights have a talent not just to move objects, but also to affect minds. And the way they can do that is manipulate people's attention.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
But magicians, and Jedi Knights are in some respects magicians, can do exactly that without any supernatural powers. What they can do is draw your attention to, you know, the right hand when the left hand is doing something that seems magical if you're not looking at it. And what some of the behavioral economics has shown is that our attention is a very limited commodity, and sometimes we won't see things that are even in front of our eyes. And that applies not just to magic stuff, but to behavioral efforts by, let's say, self-interested companies to manipulate us by making sure we don't see that even though the refrigerator doesn't cost so much up front, there are going to be ancillary charges that are going to be big, and also to run the refrigerator for the next year is going to be super expensive. And governments, when they're working well, I think, often are trying to expand people's attention so that they see aspects of a transaction that really matter their lives, like calories. That's a nudge, calorie label.
So those are just Jedi mind tricks presented in a boring way.
Yes. And they are, I think they're not so much mind tricks. They're a little more, as you say, boring. But they are designed to make sure that you aren't, let's say, confounded by Jedi mind tricks. So they're counteracting a mind trick.
You are a defender of the terrible Star Wars movies that came out, or the movies that I and many people think are terrible. Is that because that they expand this story that you talk about of, oh, Darth Vader is not all terrible, Luke is not all good? Because they do have bad acting and bad dialogue, for instance.
Well, let's say a few things that might also be true.
Okay.
I can't deny what you just said, but The Revenge of the Sith is a terrific movie. The way that Anakin Skywalker's fall to the dark side mirrors Luke's refusal to fall, that's kind of beautiful and very precise. The dialogue is almost the same in some of the scenes. And what Lucas pulls off is that detachment is the Yoda theme, both in the original trilogy and the prequels. You have to be detached.
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
But both Anakin's refusal to be detached in the prequels and Anakin's refusal to be detached in the original trilogy, that leads to his killing, and It leads to his redemption.
You're somebody who obviously cares about the nature and survival of democracy and the rule of law and all that. I can imagine that another thing that interested you in the middle movies was the other big storyline, which is this republic turning into a fascist empire.
Yeah, that's grown on me, I should say. When I first saw the prequels, I reacted, I think, like a lot of people, which is, you know, why don't we get to something interesting? But it holds up really well. And I think not just because we live in a time when, let's say, strongmen are having appeal in both Europe and the United States.
You mean the Republicans have just nominated Emperor Palpatine?
Well, I wouldn't say that. But I would say that Mr. Trump, whether you like him or don't like him, some of his appeal is he's going to knock some heads. The niceties don't matter to him in the way they standardly do. The idea that we have a broken, paralyzed legislative process and we need someone who can set things right, Trump's appeal has something to do with that. And in Europe, we're seeing that as well. And so I think Lucas did get right that dynamic.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a coincidence or a prophecy on his part. He studied history, and he particularly studied Nazi Germany and Napoleon's France, and saw how a broken or blocked legislature can often breed a real challenge, a serious challenge to democratic forms.
The Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire!
So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause.
But it's an interesting question about whether what the United States of America in this day and age is in the Star Wars scheme, because we all like to think of ourselves as the part of the Rebel Alliance, of course. Yet, aren't we, I mean, are we more the Empire or more the Rebel Alliance in 2016?
We're a republic. So I agree with you that the question, who is what, is something that the Star Wars movies provocatively and deliberately pose. And Lucas, when he did the original ones, he's on record as saying he saw the Empire as the United States. Now, it's not a didactic thing. My view of the United States is, you know, Benjamin Franklin said after the Constitution was drafted in response to a question on the spot, what have you given us? And he said, a republic if you can keep it.
This is not just a book that you wrote out of your head. You obviously did research. Did you discover things that surprised you about how these movies came to be?
Very much so. So I had believed the account, which has been offered publicly, which is that George Lucas had figured out the arc of the narrative at a very early stage, and he just kind of spooled it out. But what I learned from doing the research, and I read basically, you know, 12 drafts or partial drafts of A New Hope and corresponding numbers of at least the total for the others, is that the big plot twists were relatively late developments. So the idea that Darth Vader was supposed to be Luke's dad from the beginning, nope. Originally, in fact, Darth Vader was a really minor character and Luke was old, so that couldn't be. Uh-huh. So Lucas's improvisation and kind of on-the-spot movements completely surprised me, stunned me in view of what people think.
So in other words, you're not an originalist. I guess none of us should be originalists when it comes to Star Wars.
No. So as for the Constitution, so too for Star Wars, there's a lot of improvisation on the spot.
Well, and you say in the book, in fact, about the Constitution, that the debates, the endless debates among Star Wars fans and nerds are useful and are like constitutional debates.
Completely. So when we talk about whether the Constitution protects the right to same-sex marriage, now the right to polygamy, whether it protects against surveillance, or whether to interpret it that way is foolish and ridiculous, that's like the Star Wars fans debates over, you know, did Han shoot first? Is
yes.
Are the movies actually secretly on the side of Emperor Palpatine? Those are all kind of like our constitutional debates.
When you get on the court, you can make all the other eight people have these very conversations, and that will be when they start televising, I guess, Supreme Court decisions.
Maybe.
Thank you very much, Cass. This was just a pleasure.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Kurt. Good to talk.
Cass Sunstein's fascinating little book, The World According to Star Wars, is out now.